Joining me on the Jefferson Exchange are the co-authors of the book, Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. You can also add your voice to the conversation by sending comments or questions to jx@jeffnet.org. You can also find this episode on JPR's Facebook page. Joining the JX are Diane Ehrensaft. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Michelle Jerkowitz. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I really would like to know how you both came to collaborate on this book. But first, let's start with a bit of individual backgrounds on you both. Diane, let's start with you.
Well, my present position right now is I am the director of mental health at the University of California, San Francisco, Benioff Children's Hospital Child and Adolescent Gender Center. And I work there as a psychologist. And I also work very closely with my co-author, Michelle, and we are also involved in a mental health group called Mind the Gap, which is associated with the center. I go way back in terms of my interest in gender issues. That was the topic of my doctoral dissertation, which I completed in 1974. So there have been many decades where I've been working on the issues of gender, particularly for children, and watching the changes over all those decades until we've gotten to where we are now.
Excellent. So Michelle, what's your story?
Well, I am a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice in Berkeley, California. I see all ages in individuals, couples, and families. And I'm also a pediatric gender specialist. That's where Diane and I work closely and have for many years.
So how did you two decide to collaborate on writing this book, Gender Explained?
Well, Diane, I'll jump in and start, and then Michelle can add that I have been working with the publishing house, The Experiment, for many years, and I published my last two books on gender with them. And I had the idea for a new book about gender, and I pitched the book to the publishers, and they said, that's a great idea, but we would really like you to write another book, and that other book would be to help with all the confusion that people are having about gender and the shifts in gender and gender diversity. And I put it on the back burner to think about for a while. And while it was on the back burner, Michelle approached me, and I'll let Michelle take it from there.
Yes, I, you know, as part of the Mind the Gap that Diane had mentioned earlier, we've been having many conversations about all the confusion about the gender-affirmative model and gender-affirming care, the controversy, the misconceptions. And I felt it was really important to get the truth out there and to try to help people understand what the truth is. And so I knew Diane had written several books before, and she's an excellent author. So I'd gone to Diane with this idea, this book, thinking that perhaps Diane would write this book. And instead, in our conversation, we made the decision to write it together.
Well, since we're addressing a really controversial topic and perhaps unfamiliar to many in our audience, I want to go slow and start with simple definitions. And you can both take turns on these if you'd like. But let's start with, what is the difference between gender and the sex of a person?
Gender... So I'll start with sex. Sex is what we think of as the more biological distinction between male and female. It's often determined based on someone's chromosomes and their external genitalia, whereas gender is more about an internal felt sense of who somebody is in regards to their gender. And their people's genders often match the sex designated to them at birth, but not always. And when the gender identity and the sex designated at birth don't match, that's when we're seeing transgender, non-binary, and other diverse identities.
Okay. And Diane, what is gender identity?
I'm so glad you asked that, because I was about to say we then have to divide up gender into its component parts. So we have gender identity, and that's the inner sense that every single one of us has about who we are. Are we a girl, a boy, a man, a woman, a transgender person, a non-binary person, or a whole other variety of iterations of gender? So it's really an internal psychological sense of who we are, and it is based certainly in part on the sex designated at birth, but it also has to do with other parts of our biology and neurology, also our how we're nurtured and taken care of, and our culture. They all come together to give us a sense of who we are. Then there's gender expressions. And that's how we do our gender, what kind of clothes we like to wear, that we might say make a gender statement about us and the culture we live in, activities we like to do, whatever it may be, which has to do with communicating our gender both to ourselves and to others. And so those are the two major components when we talk about somebody's gender, their gender identity and their gender expressions. And that's to absolutely be divided from when we talk about sexual identity, which is our attractions, who we're attracted to, how we know ourselves to be that way. They can cross, but we often confuse them, and they are different.
Well, I should note that there's a glossary of terms in your book at the very front rather than at the end, and I found that helpful. So let's continue with some basic definitions to establish this common frame of reference for our listeners, and then we'll dive into your book. So what is gender spectrum and gender diversity?
I missed the first word.
What is a gender spectrum and gender diversity?
When we think of a gender spectrum, the way it's often thought about is almost like a line. If you imagine a line on a piece of paper with femininity on one end and masculinity on the other, and that people fall, you know, throughout this spectrum, across the spectrum and in, you know, various points, that it's unlikely that somebody is just all feminine or all masculine, that we're all somewhere on the spectrum. Gender diversity is this idea that each individual has their own unique gender. They have their own unique ways of experiencing their gender and of expressing their gender, and that we're all different, and that this is normal. This is a normal human variation. It's healthy that we're all diverse. And the idea that gender exists on a binary of just male or female is not what we're seeing anymore.
So that leads us to gender creativity.
Yes, and I'll jump in on that one because I made that up. And I would back up and say, what a good question about the gender spectrum, because that was a remedy to the notion that gender just comes in two boxes, boy, girl, male, female, man, woman. And that the idea was, no, it's like a color spectrum, and it can slide along there with variations on somebody's gender, and which is a great concept. But when I was thinking about it a while ago, I thought, I like that, but it's two-dimensional, and I would like something three-dimensional. So it just doesn't slide from male to female, but extends in all directions of all the possibilities. So I made up something called the gender web, and that's talked about in Gender Explained. And I said that every person weaves together their own gender web, and it takes gender creativity to do that. And that's our weaving process, how we put together the different components of ourselves to be the person we are in terms of our gender. And that is our gender creativity. And everybody has one because each person weaves their own web. There's no boilerplate or cookie cutter.
Oh, this is so good. But we have to take a short break. The Jefferson Exchange will return shortly with our guests, Diane Ehrensaft and Michelle Jerkowitz, co-authors of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Diane Aaron Saft and Michelle Jerkowitz, co-authors of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. You can send your comments or questions to jx@jeffnet.org. We'll also post this episode on the JX Facebook page. So, Diane, in the foreword written by Dr. Steven Rosenthal, he mentions the origin of gender-affirming care was out of the Netherlands in the late 20th century. What is gender-affirming care?
Gender-affirming care, first of all, is a term that many people are very confused by, and some people attribute bad things to. So I'm so glad you asked. It's the idea that, starting from the premise that every child, every adolescent, every adult should be able to, for their health, to live in the gender that's most authentic to them, we developed a program for which we could facilitate that and help particularly children from as young as age 3 into adulthood to be able to explore, to get in focus what their gender is beyond 2 boxes, if it is, and develop a plan for them to be able to live filled with acceptance and minus aspersion. And that was the underpinning of the gender-affirming model. And we definitely thank our colleagues in the Netherlands for getting the ball rolling on that approach. And we've built on it ever since.
Well, it sounds like that's just a human thing to do. Diane, the book starts with the story of Jenna and the birth of gender-revealing parties, which are now quite popular. But that popularity also introduced some tragic events, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about
Michelle,
that?
Michelle, you want to answer that one?
Sure. Yes, at the beginning of the book, we talk about gender reveal parties and how over the past decade or so, they've become more and more elaborate. And we've seen over the past few years, I mean, people even being killed, seriously injured. We've seen huge wildfires started as a result of these gender reveal parties. And we're pointing out that this is a lot of to do about a little baby's gender that in some ways we don't really know yet. We just know their sex.
Hmm.
And I would add to that, that the irony in the story is that Jenna very poignantly tells her own story that she did not know what she was setting off when she first came up with this idea. And she retracted the notion of gender reveal parties when her own child said to her, "Guess what? I'm not the gender you think I am." So it was definitely a learning curve for her, as it is for so many parents along the way, from who they thought their child was to who they discover their child is around their gender.
Okay, so Michelle, let's get into some of the data related to gender. The book talks about research that reveals how the numbers of young people identifying as transgender have exploded since 2017. Can you talk about that?
Yes, that's referring to the fact that so many more young people are coming out as transgender, non-binary, genderqueer, or other gender diverse identities. And we've seen much larger numbers come out. And, you know, some of this we understand as the reality that in our culture and in many societies around the world, there's been more room for people to explore and declare their gender, even if it's not the one that everyone thought it was. And we're seeing more people show up at gender clinics, likely because there's increased knowledge about the existence of gender clinics and for support. And there's also more insurance companies, right, that are paying for this care.
Well, you also talk about, and you mentioned it just now, how the increase of gender diversity isn't just an American thing, but it's happening all over the world. And it isn't just in the countries that are dominated by white Europeans as well.
This is correct. I think one of the examples in the book is India. Their Supreme Court there declared that it was a human right to be able to name your own gender. We're seeing similar movement in throughout Latin America as well, and some Asian countries. So we're really seeing it all over.
So let's talk
I would add to that, add one thing to that is we're seeing it more. That doesn't mean it's the first time it's ever happened. I think there's now more of an opening for people to come forward, to speak their gender, to share their gender. But historically, we have always seen this. And it really was a European model of a particular kind, that there are just two boxes, the Western model. But I would just want to say, historically, this is not a new thing.
Well, that,
in terms of gender diversity.
That's a very good point, because there's a lot of things that we've been indoctrinated into thinking, or there are false narratives about, that permeate our society that don't actually match the reality. And so when the truth about the reality starts to emerge, we tend to think that's a new thing, but it's really, we're first learning about things that have always been there. Am I understanding that correctly?
You are, absolutely. I think what's happening right now, going back to the gender affirmative model, when we started it, we thought it would be really on the fringe. And then we found out we were ascending as both a model of care and a way to think about people. And there are a lot of people who had a hard time with that because it, and they are having a hard time with it right now, it challenges what they learned and what they were taught about gender in two boxes. So we're at a point where I think there's something that's been going on for a long time, but right now it looks like a brand new change, and it makes people very anxious given what they were brought up to believe.
My guests today are Diane Ehrensaft and Michelle Jerkowitz, co-authors of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. So let's talk about the political debate over gender. Lawmakers and school boards, you know, they're all stressed over this issue. Media reports are covering stories about the use of bathrooms, participation in sports, banning of books. What are your thoughts, Michelle, about how this issue has risen to the level of policymaking priorities?
Well, the first thought that comes to mind is what Diane was touching on, that, you know, people are very anxious about this shifting gender from two boxes into gender diversity. The gender binary in the Western world has been an organizing feature of our cultures and societies. And I think when people get anxious and they get worried, they immediately go to this place of something's wrong here and something needs to be changed. And when people are feeling anxious, they often want to either avoid what makes them feel anxious or they want to get rid of it. And so I think that part of what is happening is there's just been this increase in anxiety. And I think in many cases, the media has fueled this anxiety to the point that people are introducing legislation, politicians are introducing legislation, and there's all this controversy in the media. And I think it's fanned also by confusion about what is even going on. And so I think these are attempts to shut something down that feels really scary. Many people.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on, to have this book explain to us more in depth the factual pieces of information that we're just not getting out there. And another part of your book talks about pronouns, which is another adaptation in our society. And admittedly, I am personally still working on using preferred pronouns because I'm a work in progress, but I'm working on it. I want to be respectful of everyone, of course. And it helps to have this book explain the language and the history. Can you, Diane, talk more about the importance of pronouns?
I'm so glad you asked that, because what's in a pronoun? What's in a pronoun, a gender pronoun, is an understanding by a person that other people correctly see who they are and don't deny who they are and respect who they are. So they're tags. So, for example, my pronouns are she, her, and they always have been. They haven't changed. But if somebody used the pronouns he, him for me, I would feel off balance or angry, or who are you looking at? Do you even know me? And that is what happens for somebody who communicates my pronouns are, for example, they, them, and somebody doesn't use them. They feel unseen, or they feel like there's a mirror being held back to them, like a mirror in a funny house, that just is a distorted vision of them. So going back to that, every person should be able to live in their authentic gender. It's up to all of us as a community to support that. And one important way is using the pronouns that a person communicates are theirs. And they're not necessarily preferred. They're actually just the ones they are.
Oh, it's a very good point. But not everyone is enamored with this growing trend in gender diversity. Michelle, there's still a lot of resistance, even vitriol and hostility. Why do you think that is? Why don't we care about every child as a human?
Well, I think because people are feeling anxious and scared that they're forgetting that we're talking about children and humans. They are, you know, reframing it, right, in the media as ideology, or that somehow it's the, you know, liberal agenda, rather than remembering that, you know, these are children just like all the other children in our country, and they deserve and need care.
Well, you both asked this question in your book, and here's the question. How and why are gender norms shifting now? I think that's a good question.
Yes. I mean, one thing we talk about in the book is that the shifting gender norms have already been happening. And if we just focus in on the United States, I mean, we saw huge movement in the so-called woman box or girl box, particularly in the 1920s with the changing in dress and more androgynous styles, and then through World War II. And then we saw the male box, the man box or boy box open up a little bit in later decades. We're seeing, for example, more men who might stay home with the children or work in early childhood education, just like we're seeing more women take on roles that had traditionally been reserved for men. And so I think the stage was set for these younger generations because they're coming into a world where that's already the norm, and it gives them space to stretch and imagine beyond, even beyond that, as generations before them had been doing.
Well, we have time for one more question, and this is the last one. Diane, you get to ask this. You get to answer this one. You ask another question in the book. Which one, who are the genders in your neighborhood today? Who are the genders in your neighborhood today? We've got about 30 seconds. Diane.
I would say never take for granted that you know who the genders in your neighborhood are. Because particularly with children, if you want to know a child's gender, you have to listen, not tell. So I would say the genders in your neighborhood are very varied. A recent survey came out with 3.3% of high school students today in our country identify as transgender, 2.2% questioning their gender identity. And this is by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention that just happened. So the genders in your neighborhood are for you to learn about and explore, never take for granted, and always honor and respect, because I'm guessing it's a really rich and varied, exciting variety.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the JX today. Thank you, Diane and Michelle, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
My guests were Diane Ehrensaft and Michelle Jerkowitz, co-authors of Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. You can find this conversation and more at jeffexchange.org or subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mike Green. Natalie Golay is our senior producer, and Andrew Crackle is engineering our show. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.